The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
We have made it to start.
3, 2, 1. It's the Space Show with Dr. David Wigginson. Broadcasting from 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Wigginson.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to our Friday morning Space Show program. I'm your host, David Livingston. Thank you for tuning in. We have an interesting program today. I'll tell you about it in just a minute. First, a couple of very, very quick announcements. We're on the 60-minute format, so watch your clock if you want to give us a call. Again, our toll-free number, 866-687-7223. Or if you want to send us an email for our guest, Dr. Space, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And then the program will be archived later today. Don't forget, Jim Muncy returns to the show on Sunday. And then all of the newsletters will be published this weekend, so you can see the full schedule coming up for the coming week. And I'm happy. First, let me do just a couple of announcements to save some time. You can listen to this program live. Go to Listen Live, and it's up at the top, and you'll be able to follow the instructions for a live show, a podcast, and then archives as well on the website. And if you have any questions, just email me at drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And then don't forget, we're a nonprofit 501c3 with One Giant Leap Foundation. And listeners just like you today, you help support the Space Show so that we can have great guests on the program. And as a 501c3, if you're a federal taxpayer, you do get a tax deduction for your gift. And you need to check with your state to see if they recognize other states' 501c3 programs. And we are, for the moment, a California 501c3, but that may change in the near future. And we have a big big box up at the top of the show for at top of the homepage for PayPal, and that's the easiest way to support us. But if you do go old school and want to mail a check, it's to One Giant Leap Foundation, and it mails to Box 95, Tiburon, California, 94920. So for today, I'm very happy to introduce to all of you Mark Bell. He is the co-founder, chairman, and CEO of the leader in small satellites, Terran Orbital. Their website is terranorbital.com. Mark has a lot of experience in this field. And to save time, I just want to direct you to his bio, which is on our website right now, so you can check it out. But he has a lot of experience with Globex Corporation, the Global Internet Exchange, and a lot more. So I think you'll find his bio very, very interesting. But we want to talk about small satellites and Terran Orbital with our guest today. Mark, welcome to the Space Show. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
A pleasure. Nice to meet you. Tell us about Terran Orbital and how do you actually define the small satellites? What is your business niche, so to speak?
So Terran Orbital is the company that I started just under 10 years ago. We are the pioneers of new space, and I can say that definitively, as we are the people who invented the CubeSat. The CubeSat was invented by Dr. Jory Pugh-Swari and Bob Twiggs, and Dr. Swari had founded and built the CubeSat at a company called TIVAC, NASA Satellite Systems, that we acquired back in 2013. So this whole new space revolution began here at Terran Orbital.
Interesting. What made you think that that was going to be a way of the future way back when?
You know, I was invited to go about a decade ago down to SpaceX to for a tour, and I was looking at how someone was telling me they could put a school bus into outer space jokingly, and I asked them, why would they throw a school bus into outer space, and they laughed. And I said, no, seriously, if my iPhone has more computing power than the space shuttle, why is anybody building a satellite the size of a school bus? And they're like, what are you getting at? I'm like, I'm thinking of building really, really small satellites. And with that, I went on a mission to learn more about the CubeSat, which was an educational demonstrator started by two college professors. And I flew up to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo to meet Jordy. And I asked if he wanted to come work together. And he was excited, but he said I had to buy his company, Tyvek. So we acquired Tyvek and then merged into Terran Orbital. And back then, Tyvek was selling parts to enable colleges, universities, and startups to build CubeSats. And CubeSat is a satellite that you can hold in the palm of your hand. And our very first CubeSat that we built, the sister to it, has actually been sent to the Smithsonian Institution, which will be on a permanent display starting next year. So we're very excited about that. And Jordy is being inducted into, I think, the Space Hall of Fame at Space Symposium in the first week of April for his accomplishments in developing it. And so we decided to stop selling parts and start building satellites. But we realized that, you know, he did it kind of like an open format, so everybody was able to use a CubeSat. Anyone could build one. And all these companies, Planet, Black Sky, Spire, and so many others, wouldn't exist today if it wasn't for Tyvek and the parts that we developed. So then you fast forward, you know, 10 years later, you know, the U.S. government is saying how 50,000 satellites are going to be launched over the next 10 years. And everybody's fascinated with launch. SpaceX, Rocket Lab, it's exciting to go see a launch. And but no one ever talks about who's going to build them. And we are the last independent manufacturer of small sats based here in the United States. But to us, a small sat now are predominantly in the 150 to 500 kilogram range. So to realize, well, CubeSats, 1U's, 3U's, 6U's are cute, and they're functional, they do things, but in order to be very functional and provide a lot of added value in low Earth orbit, you really need a larger form factor to have enough electricity, enough battery. So as you go around the Earth, you don't always have to be in sun-synchronous orbit, and you'll have enough power when you're in the dark side of the Earth at night. You can still do whatever you're trying to do, and broadcast it back to the ground without having the sun powering it. And it's exciting, and we're a one-stop solution provider. So in other words, so we go ahead, we build 5G, Internet of Things, radar, electro-optical imaging, synthetic aperture radar, RF, but we're predominantly a military contractor. So we think ourselves being in the A&D space. Our primary customer is the DOD and the intelligence community. We do a lot of work for NASA, which is really amazing, but our bread and butter is PETOR.
What can a 150 to 500 kilo small sat do? Is it limited, or can it do what a big satellite does?
So it could do what a big satellite do. What used to cost $1 billion now costs $10 million. What used to take 8 to 10 years to build now takes 12 to 24 months to build. And, you know, people like SpaceX made it affordable for satellites to get into space. People like us made it affordable to build the satellites that they're going to launch.
So if you're building for DOD and intelligence and other agencies, I don't expect you to be able to say much on this, but I'm curious, how are you protecting them from other nefarious actors? Well, Russia did an ASAT test, you know, around late last year. Who knows what's going on over Ukraine? I'm sure most of what's going on is not in the press. So how do you protect them if you're building for DOD? And can you say anything about that at all?
Yeah, well, it's easy. So we built the majority of what we build is in low Earth orbits. You know, General Hyten once said, you know, he's tired of building big, juicy targets in space. And so what the government used to do is build these massive geosynchronous satellites that sit there that are big sitting ducks. We are in low Earth orbit, and granted, we build mid-Earth orbit. We do build geo. We are even building missions to the moon. We have two being launched shortly. two missions to the moon, Lunar and Capstone. And we are, but we're in low Earth orbit. We're traveling at 6 kilometers a second. And think of that as three times the speed of a hypersonic missile. We're going really fast. We're really hard to catch. And because you launch these, in large constellation, not just one off, you have lots of redundancy built in. So even if they knock out just one of my satellites, it doesn't make a difference.
That's pretty fast at 6 kilometers per second in LEO. What's the life expectancy of these small sats?
So the way you get the cost down, one of the things is you don't build them to be radiation hardened. So they last about 5 years. We build them to last a minimum of 5 years in orbit. They can last 6, 7, or 8, but 5 years is what they're built for. So they'll last 5 years. They last 5 years in orbit, and they will. Because the radiation from the sun will burn up the batteries. We will then deorbit them and send them back to Earth. So we try to be social responsibility as far as we're leaving no impact in space, no debris. Everything deorbits, and zero footprint in space.
I have a question already for you. Todd is in San Diego, and he said, I know you're not building Starlinks, but are they on the order of what you're talking about?
Yes. I think we're much larger than Starlink. We build satellites the size of the refrigerator in your kitchen.
And that's considered a small sat?
Correct.
That seems pretty big to me, but
as long as you can fit it in the back of your Chevy Suburban, it's a small sack.
Okay, so I guess that's a good key, right? Do you have international customers, or is this an ITAR product?
I know we have international customers. We actually have a factory in Italy that just does international work, and so we have a Chinese wall between the U.S. for lack of maybe it's a better term than that, between the U.S. and Italy. So everything that's ITAR products never leave the country. They're built in Italy.
Fascinating. So are you how do you get your funding? I mean, are you a public company or a SPAC, or how do people can people buy stock in you? What's the story on funding?
Sure. So we are a so last fall, my company, Terran Orbital, reached an agreement to merge with a company called Tailwind 2, which trades today under the ticker symbol TWNT. Tailwind 2 is a special purpose acquisition company, or SPAC, and if and when the transaction closes, those shares of TWNT will be exchanged for shares of our company, Terran Orbital, and merged with Tailwind 2. We're expecting that merger to take place on March 25th of this month, if all goes as planned. Our vote is on March 18th. But the SPAC is just a vehicle to go public. We could have done an IPO. We could have done a direct listing, but we felt the SPAC had the highest likelihood to close. And before then, funding came from, Lockheed Martin has been our largest funding source. After that, it was Beachpoint Capital and then myself and my partners.
What's the symbol it's going to trade under when it goes to the SPAC?
You're going to love this. LLAP.
LLAT.
You know what that stands for?
No, but you're going to tell me, right?
Live long and prosper.
Really?
Yep. How cool is that?
Very. I would not have guessed that, but so it's P, not T, right?
LLAP. P is in prosper.
I bet some of my listeners might have eventually figured that one out, but I would not have figured that one out. So you must be a Star Trek fan then.
I am a huge Trekkie, and I am very, very, very thrilled to have gotten the stock symbol. And because, this is I always joke, this is a Trekkie's dream come true. I was a Trekkie as a kid, and now I'm actually building real vehicles in space.
Where do you see this all going in 5 years? Because for CubeSats in general, I would imagine there's not a lot of barriers to entry because there's so many players getting into it in the market with imaging and who knows what else. Where do you see all of this in 5 years from now?
Well, we don't build CubeSats anymore. We don't build that. We don't do that anymore. We are building, you know, satellites, you know, the size of a small refrigerator to the size of a large refrigerator in the kitchen. You know, we don't build little things to hold in your hands anymore.
Okay.
You know, we're building much more functional things with a lot of power. We do 5G from space, Internet of Things from space. We do electro-optical imaging. We do hyperspectral imaging. We do synthetic aperture radar, software-defined synthetic aperture radar. We do communications. We do, we're gambit of satellites. We're a satellite manufacturer, and we're really a contract manufacturer. People like Lockheed or the DOD, the IC community, NASA, hire us to solve problems from space. So people come to us with a problem they wish to solve from space. We help design and build a constellation to solve their problem.
So that side of the business, the contract side, how do you see that in 5 years? So, and do things in the economy today influences like the national debt influence, inflation, excuse me, interest rate raises that they promise they're going to give us as a great gift, and other things going on in the economy? How does that affect your contracting business? And in 5 years, what would you guess?
So, you know, we're very lucky on multiple levels. First, you know, the NDAA, or National Defense Authorization Act, is the act that funds the DOD and the IC community. It is the only thing in Congress that the Democrats and the Republicans have almost unanimously agreed upon in the past 60 years every year. And in a time that this, we now have a Democratic-controlled Congress and a Democratic White House, the Democrats did what the Republicans usually do, is they actually, when the DOD put in for its funding, they gave the DOD $25 billion more than they requested. And that's usually a Republican trick. That's how much bipartisan support you truly have for what, for national security. And what's going on today in the Ukraine really highlights the need for assets in space, for intelligence gathering, for real-time information on what's going on around the world. And you know, and we see demand going through the roof.
Do you have competitors?
We had a lot of great competitors. They all got acquired. Like Blue Canyon got acquired by Raytheon. Millennium got acquired by Boeing. So we say like the Borg, they got assimilated. And I don't know, Star Trek team again, I realize. So all that high cost structure of these big primes got pushed down onto their acquisition, which made them non-competitive. But we still compete when we are a prime. We work hand-in-hand with Lockheed. We have a strategic cooperation agreement with Lockheed Martin that we do a lot of programs together with. We're on SDA's Tranche 0. We just won SDA's Tranche 1. We continue to win more and more programs. We win because we're cost-effective and we're priced competitively. And unlike most of these startups, we've been doing this longer than everybody else, putting small satellites into space.
Fascinating. I have an email from Jerry, and Jerry's also in San Diego. Interesting. And Jerry says, how fast is the technology changing? So something you maybe did 2 years ago or 3 years ago, has it already been passed by in new technology?
You know, it's just like your iPhone. It keeps changing. So the great news is, because it only takes us 12 to 24 months to design, build, and launch a satellite, and it is something, you know, technology, we keep these satellites very current. Because they're also only built, because remember, a satellite used to cost $1 billion to build, let's say, in 8 to 10 years. So now divide that $1 billion up by $10 million, and you can build a lot of satellites. So for the same amount of money. So you then stagger that over a couple of years, and you always have current technology in orbit. Because right now, I saw a satellite the other day that they started working on only 15 years ago. And it's a big satellite program. And done by one of the big primes. But my iPhone had more computing power than that satellite. But that's just the nature of the beast. And so we are revolutionizing how the military looks at small sat.
Pretty interesting. Is your iPhone as reliable as the big satellite?
No, my satellites are far more reliable than the iPhone. Because I have to reboot this thing every day. It kills me.
I'm lucky if mine even works where I live. So, but maybe that has more to do with the company than the iPhone. I'm unsure about this. You have Jane in Seattle. And Jane says, what are employment possibilities in your company, especially for fresh hires out of school, and what do you look for?
So if you go to terranorbital.com, there's a career section. I have 184 job openings as of last night. some of those jobs that are posted are for multiple people. We love people out of school. We love people with 20 years experience. It's all about, but we only hire the best and the brightest. So we always look for people who are super smart. And most people here have an advanced degree. Most people here, were electrical engineering, mechanical, structural, thermal, aerospace. There's a lot of very, very smart people roaming the hall for this place. I can proudly say I am the dumbest guy in the building. And I always want to remain that way. Because if someone here is dumber than me, they shouldn't be here.
Barry's in Denver, Colorado, and listeners, as you know, I make this appeal on every single show. We much prefer phone calls over email, 1-866-687-7223. But Barry in Denver chose email. So Barry says, we hear nonstop, no matter what news you listen to, about cyber threats here and there. So are you vulnerable to cyber threats, both in terms of your satellites, but also your company? Are you a hacking target, for example, since DOD is a customer?
So we never comment on things like that. I could say in general that every defense company is always a target. And our satellites in space, keep in mind, they're moving really fast. And first of all, for a ground station to lock onto them, it's very difficult. So they are moving at 6 kilometers a second, but we take cybersecurity very, very seriously. And other than that, I have no comment.
Do you have any kind of orbiting servicing with your satellites? Can that be done with LEO satellites? We hear a lot about companies working on orbiting servicing for satellites. I know that's probably in higher orbit. But how about for you and LEO?
Yeah, no, we actually do MEO, we do GEO, we do Lunar. We operate everywhere. So there is no domain in space that we don't operate. LEO just happens to be what everybody talks about, because that's where the most activity is going on. The really exciting stuff is going probably further up and further out. I mean, we have a mission to the moon where we're going to help map the moon with infrared. That'll be launching in May. We have another mission to the moon. We're going to help build the communications constellation for the first moon base, where the satellites will always be at the relay stations that will always be facing the Earth. So they'll be in constant contact with the Earth all the time.
So what about orbital servicing and life extension and things like that that we hear a lot about?
Yeah. We spend a lot of time talking to people with customers on how to build geosynchronous satellites that you can swap out boards in space, make them upgradable in space. We've spent a lot of time doing research on that and helping customers work through solutions to solve that problem.
Do you have any debris mitigation plans, or is that another niche in the business left to other companies?
No, we believe you have to do, we do it all. So we do what's called space situational awareness, where we help map out space debris, and we have satellites that do that. And we're also working on collision avoidance systems. So we have, if you ever go on an airplane, and if you know, in a cockpit of all airplanes today, it's something called a TCAS, traffic collision avoidance system. And if another plane is coming into, it feels like there's going to be a collision, it tells you pull up, go left, go to the right. It screams out instruction on which way to go. So we're working on building that sort of TCAS into our satellites. So when it sees an object coming towards it, it knows where to move out of the way, and then move back into position all on its own. So this is, think of this as artificial intelligence in space. The satellite's making a decision where to go to avoid the object that's coming through it, and then go back to where it needs to be.
pretty impressive. And you design these yourself. You're not contracting out the design or any of the manufacturing on the satellites. Everything is in-house. Is that correct?
We make 85% of our components in-house. We are working on vertically integrating. So my goal is within 3 years, 100% of everything will be built in-house, except for solar panels, which we'll always get from Lockheed Martin.
And you're launching on all launchers, but that's probably not your choice then. It's your whoever contracted you choice, right?
Correct. The customer decides where he wants to launch. Though we do spend, a majority of our satellites are done on SpaceX. They're a very reliable ride, but we use Rocket Lab as well. And, you know, we are, but the customer drives the bulk of that program.
Have you done any on foreign launchers or Ariane or any other possible options out there?
We have in the past. Going forward, we don't, as our client base goes almost exclusively to the DOD and IC, not exclusively, but majority to DOD and IC, that is the U.S. launches tend to be the best. And also, it's more cost effective since we build the majority of the satellites here in the U.S. We do have an Italian facility. But so the ones built in Italy will launch in Europe. But all the ones built here in the States, we launch in the States.
Where is your manufacturing done in the U.S.?
We have a facility in Irvine, California. And then we have offices around the country.
Fascinating. Once you're a SPAC, and I guess that's the end of March, right?
Well, no, we'll never be a SPAC. So a SPAC's a four-letter word in this world. We're merging into a company that happens to be public, and it happens to be a SPAC. But people confuse SPACs with the companies they're acquiring. So we tell you, most people don't focus on the target. And there are a lot of companies out there that have merged into SPACs today that never should have gone public. They weren't, you know, we're very different. And we're very normal. We're a real company with real revenue, real backlog, real pipeline, and real management. I announced just recently over 170 million dollars of new contracts and awards. I announced just a week and a half ago. You don't see any of these other new space startups doing stuff like that, and that's just in the past few weeks. So you know we are very much a real company. And that could take advantage of the public capital market.
So I was driving at, and so maybe my assumption is wrong, and you can correct me, that this would lead you to being listed as an exchange-traded bond, but it sounds like you'll be on a regular stock exchange listing.
Yes, we will be on the New York Stock Exchange.
Okay.
We'll be on the world's biggest exchange.
Do you see the use of commercial assets in this Ukraine thing going on, which seems to be new to many, many people? You know, I'm seeing articles about it and tweets and this and that and the other, and a lot of people seem almost surprised the role of commercial sats and what they're doing over Ukraine. Is this a game changer for the industry?
It's proving the fact that the world needs more ISR, you know, intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance satellites. And, you know, so because Ukraine is in dire need of data. And with data, you know, you think about it, you know, we've had peace in Europe for 60 years. You've had peace, you know, Russia. We've had detente with Russia, you know, and because, you know, we were all in open book. You know, until Trump, we had overflight. They could fly over us. We could fly over them. They saw our nuclear missiles. We saw theirs. When you have full transparency, that's how you prevent a war. And in this case, you know, there was, you know, the Ukrainians, you know, kind of got, you know, stuck in the middle of a political pissing match between NATO and Russia. And you know, it's very much unfortunate what's happening over there. There's no reason for it in this day and age. You would hope we've become more civilized as we mature as a civilization.
Well, live long and prosper. on the website.
Exactly.
But the commercial satellites, is for the most part, is there data quality enough for all of these purposes that we're sort of talking about today? Do they come up short in some of the work that they attempt to do, or are they as good as what used to be government only?
It's not as good. You know, it's okay. You know, with these commercials, but it's helpful. So, you know, I look at all these commercial companies that are trying to help Ukraine, and I applaud them for providing the data. You know, I wish they wouldn't share it with the New York Times, because, you know, anything they post to CNN and the New York Times, the Russians see as well. So that kind of defeats the purpose of intelligence. That's just a media trick that they're doing. But if they truly want to help, they should provide the Ukrainians the data and be quiet about it. Because it is data and it is useful, of whatever resolution it is.
They need to learn to be quiet. And I think SpaceX does too, because, you know, I'm reading all about how they're, you know, supplying Starlink and ground equipment to everybody. I think they're just going to be a target, and they're not immune.
Yeah.
They're not immune from being a target just because they're commercial.
SpaceX is different for what they're doing, because the difference is if people say they're trying to help the Ukraine government by posting Russian troop movements on the front page of the New York Times, you think the people in the Russian embassy in Washington, D.C. don't read the New York Times or the Washington Post? Of course they do. So as soon as they see that picture, they know to move. That's not helpful to the Ukrainians. What's helpful to the Ukrainians is knowing what's going on without the Russians knowing what they know. And that's what's helpful.
Interesting that we're having this discussion. I just got a Wired magazine bulletin. High above Ukraine, satellites get embroiled in the war. While the Russian invasion rages on the ground, companies that operate data collecting satellites find themselves in an awkward position. Of course, I don't have time to read it, but a lot of people are talking about it. And
they're using this. They're using the tragedy in Ukraine to try to pump up their stock price. And I personally find that appalling. I think they should be helpful, do the right thing, and be quiet about it. And that's the right thing to do.
So you have an email from John in Fremont, California. And he says, Terran can still become part of an exchange-traded fund, like the UFO exchange-traded fund. If they meet the criteria, I'm counting on it. So he's an ETF investor.
Well, I think that sounds great. I didn't even know there was a UFO ETF, but I just made a note of it right now. So thank you for that.
Yeah, it's I think either the first or second biggest. Their guy comes on the show all the time and talks about it and talks economy and tries to sell UFO rather than individual investing. So take your pick and take your risk. That's what I say.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, there's a lot of space companies out there and that should be not out, but we view ourselves as a defense firm. You know, we don't view ourselves as a space company. We're solving problems from space, aerospace and defense, not locked in with all these new space companies. We're in a different world.
So you're not categorized as new space or commercial in that sense at all?
We don't consider ourselves that, no. Not the way we look at ourselves. We're all about the national security, the national interest. You know, we do a lot of civil work for NASA, the DOD and the IC community is my biggest customer. That's the most important thing.
How did you end up, you know, morphing into the defense industry from your background and how you started? What's the story on that? And from CubeSats, how did you end up going DOD and what you're doing now? This is a fabulous transition.
Well, you know, it's actually been when I started Globic, we own 28,000 miles of fiber around the world. So when you own 20,000 miles of fiber around the world, you tend to make a lot of friends and a lot of three-letter agencies. And so we've maintained those friendships over the decades. as we've always viewed ourselves as patriots and wanting to help keep America safe. So it's really it's just more. And then in the 90s, when we owned Bovic, where we couldn't reach fiber, we started building ground stations throughout Eastern Europe. And we started a company called NetSat Express in order to provide IP transport, because we also started providing transponder stations and satellites, so we can reach all these ISPs in Eastern Europe that were cut off from the world because they had no access to the internet. And that was my first exposure to satellites. But it really all started when I was 10 years old and watched a 24-hour Star Trek marathon, and that's really how it all started.
So we'll put that down, 24-hour Star Trek marathon. And this is the original Star Trek, right?
Yes, the original Star Trek. I was stuck with my father at a convention. I was 10 years old. It was we couldn't go outside because it was the first we went got to Florida, and it was snowing. And it hadn't snowed in like 40 years. And so I was stuck with my sister, and I were stuck in the hotel room. And we had nothing to do but watch TV. And I never saw Star Trek before. I never heard of Star Trek. I was fascinated, and a Trekkie was born.
Jocelyn in Phoenix has an email for you. And listeners, again, if you can, try the phones instead of email, 866-687-7223. She says, since you're in Leo, what is your view of Leo getting pretty crowded and jammed with all the satellites and the constellations on the space show? They even talk about Rwanda seeking the authorization for 300,000 Leo satellites, plus whatever OneWeb and SpaceX and others are planning. Is Leo big enough to accommodate this without the risk of collision all the time?
Well, think of it this way. You know, the Earth is 60% covered by water, 40% covered by land. On that land mass, you're all in a single plane, and you have 3.2 billion cars driving around. In space, you have a plane that's bigger than the entire Earth, because it's larger than the sphere of the Earth, and you have 43,000 miles of wide. So 43,000 miles of plane to go for. So there's a lot of space in space. Space is not crowded at all. It's just people have to be more sophisticated, and that's what's happening now, is governments and companies have to be more sophisticated how they manage traffic in space. But no, there's tons of room in space to put tons of objects up there.
But is all space equal, or is there less than tons of space for desirable places to put stuff?
The real place that there's a lot of rules is geosynchronous. So there's only so many spots that are always all over New York City. So, you know, if you think about, you know, your DirecTV or your XM radio, and then all the spy satellites that sit there, the geosynchronous and orbiter communications, there are only so many spots in geosynchronous without bumping into anybody else. And that's where it gets complicated. And then what happens is people go ahead and they squat. So even if they have a satellite dead, they leave it there, so no one else can go there until they figure out what else to put there. So it's like real estate. And so it's almost like the metaverse. They own the real estate in space.
Do you see the regulatory regime changing and adversely impacting the business, or is it going to open up and maybe even be easier to function in?
I think once you get, you know, space situational awareness down to a true science, and you have true traffic control in space, and people have true collision avoidance systems, and foreign governments stop being irresponsible and blowing stuff up in space. If you look at what the Chinese did and what the Russians did, that's just irresponsible, because they're creating debris in space that could put other objects and human lives now at risk. Well, on the ISS and other things, it's irresponsible what they're doing, and they need to act responsibly. But once we figure out how to clean up the garbage in space, which will happen, I mean, that is not technologically impossible. It's actually technologically very easy. It's just someone has to have the will to pay for it at this point, to clean up the debris in space. Then it will be, things will be very organized going forward.
Timeline for all of that to take place, and including acting responsibly.
I don't know, 2,000 years, 3,000 years. We still can't act responsibly on our own planet on the ground. I don't know how we're going to do it in orbit.
Okay, so until that magic day happens, do you see an increasing overbearance of regulations to compensate for our not acting responsible?
I think you'll see more, you're definitely going to see, more and more regulation, but I don't think it'll be overbearing, because remember, every country's got to agree. So the Chinese and the Russians and everything else all have to agree.
Yeah, that's going to be an impossibility, the way we're going now. Here's another one for you. Linda's in New York, and she said right now today, the U.S. is highly partisan, highly divided on almost all issues. Maybe on Ukraine we're somewhat united, but generally speaking, we are a highly divided country, and one side hates the administration in power, and if and when that changes, then one side will still hate the administration in power. So do you see the partisanship and the politics on the domestic front going on in America, and that has gone on for maybe the past 12 to 15 years, including today, as a detriment to satellites and the space business, or is it an asset, or is it neutral?
You know, I give Congress a lot of credit and both parties a lot of credit that they both have been very unified in their approach to space for the most part. They have both been very supportive of the DOD's desire and mission in space. I think they're being very constructive and very helpful. So I really can't complain a lot about how they're. I have a lot of other things I could complain about, but space is one of them.
So space seems to have a little bit of immunity from what's going on with the rest of the country.
Well, I think they all understand that space is very everyone's interested in space. Everyone realizes you can solve problems on Earth from space, and everybody's wants it to succeed. So I think you see the government being very cooperative and very helpful. At least that's what I see, and being very cooperative and very helpful.
So we don't often on the space show get a chance to talk to the defense contractors who do that only. I mean, we have talked to people from Boeing, but usually it's about their commercial vehicles or ISS or. And we've talked to people from Lockheed, and that was mostly about Orion and their projects. But it's a little bit different in talking to you. So one of the things we also talk about, and I'm going to try to tie it together with you, is that the general public is not necessarily particularly well-informed on space. And we hear this about space tourism. We hear this about launching rockets, and they're not green, all sorts of different things, environmental concerns that maybe are not really true environmental concerns. So how do you see space in general, not specifically what you're doing, in the general public? Are we well informed on space and this type of related science, or is there a lot of room for progress?
Unfortunately, there's a lot of room for progress. You know, it's just getting the general public to understand that, first of all, not all LEO satellites are the same. Everybody assumes everybody who's in LEO is doing the exact same thing. Or everybody who's doing, not all imaging is the same. Not all technologies are the same. And nobody is trying to get people to understand they're very different products that do different things, but completely different. It goes back to, we have to spend more money in schools on STEM and, educating people in schools. And, but we need more math and science in the classroom, and that all helps down the road.
You have a listener phone call.
Hey, how about that?
So do I. hi, listener. Welcome to our program this morning. Who are you and where are you, please?
Hey, David, it's John in Fremont.
Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hey. So I had a question regarding sustainability and on-orbit servicing and stuff. Are you working with firms like Redwire to, outfit your satellites with like dog tags that are the magnetic systems for deorbiting and or servicing satellites?
We do work with Redwire. It's a great company. I don't know exactly off the top of my head what we are doing with them. We do have our own deorbiting system. I do know that. But that was long before Redwire was created. But those are great guys. They're great guys, and they've built a great business.
How does your deorbiting system work?
Like technically, how does it work? I couldn't tell you over the phone. I could tell you that we are big believers in sustainability in space, and we make sure that all our satellites deorbit when they're done with their useful life. We want to leave no footprint in space.
Is it explained someplace on your website?
It is not.
Okay. Is it a security issue?
We don't discuss the technical details of our satellite.
I understand. That makes sense. Are you like standardizing your satellite, bus or structure so that you can mass produce them?
We are working towards that goal. That is a very good question. So we are definitely working to standardizing our buses, and we make 65 components in-house already, our own star trackers, our own flight computers, our own reaction wheels, and we view it all as Lego. I also have to be a big Lego nut. I know it's a shocker. And so we literally make all our components so all plug and play. So whether we're doing a 150-kilogram bus or a 500-kilogram bus, we just literally pull out different Lego components, different battery sizes, different power modules, different radios, and plug them all together. So everything, a lot of what we do is plug and play, because we are getting to that point that we want to be able to do everything on a robotic assembly line and really produce these in mass. And so up in Brevard County, we're going to be building one of the world's largest satellite assembly facilities. It'll be over 650,000 square feet of space. It's almost a kilometer end-to-end. And that's an industry 4.0 facility where it will be a lot of robotics and a lot of automated vehicles inside the facility, moving satellites around and assembling them in mass. So we'll be able to produce over 1,000 small satellites a year out of that facility alone.
Are you doing any 3D printing?
We are going to be doing additive manufacturing, so next generation 3D printing. Are you familiar with additive manufacturing?
Yes.
Yeah. So we do that instead of 3D printing.
Okay, cool. Well, do you train your employees with the Vulcan mind meld, or how do you get them standardized?
it's close. We tried that for a while. It didn't work as well as we thought. So instead, we bought them HoloLens 2s, which is this headset that goes on their head, and it's translucent. And it shows them how to assemble a satellite, how to do a job, and then we use Bluetooth-enabled tools, so then they get real feedback back. And it's pretty impressive stuff. And so it's not quite there, but they have these eyewear that people wear is very cool. I mean, I was an early adopter of Google Glass, and I thought it was fabulous. And now with the HoloLens 2, they seem to have gotten it right.
Oh wow, that's pretty cool. Well, live long and prosper.
Yeah, but
thanks for coming on the show.
I was going to answer that. How about that?
Anything else, John?
No, that's it. Looking forward to you getting on the UFO ETF. So,
looking forward to it also, John. And thank you for calling. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you, John. Listeners, there's still time if you would like to give us a call. 1-866-687-7223. And you can continue to send email, drspace@thespaceshow.com. It sounds like you really have a good time doing what you're doing. Is there something that stands out in your work and your company and all of what we've been talking about that really sends you to the stars more than anything else?
You know, I love what I do. I truly love what I do. I work crazy hours. I put on some days 15 hours a day, and I think it's awesome. I mean, we're literally, you know, we're helping to make the world a safer place. I get to play with really cool toys, and I get to watch sci-fi movies and be like, wow, we do that. We're going to do that, and we really should do that. And that's how we watch a movie nowadays, and it's pretty funny. And so it's so exciting to see all the crazy stuff we can do from space now and watching all these, you know, spy movies. I'm like, wow, we do that now. We actually do that. That's so cool.
So you're inspired to create products or improve products by sci-fi movies?
Yeah, I'm inspired by helping to keep the warfighters safe. You know, these brave men and women go out there and put their lives on the line so we can enjoy the freedoms that we have here. Think about how lucky we are here in our society. I mean, the things people complain about here is nothing like what they have to complain about in the Ukraine. And we're very lucky and very blessed. And it's because of the hardworking men and women in the U.S. military services and in the intelligence communities that we are able to live this lifestyle. And if we could do things to help support that, that makes me feel good at night. You know, I get to sleep at night saying, wow, I made a difference. And it's nice.
And you have a lot of fun doing it.
I have a lot of fun doing it. I have the best job in the world. I'm doing my passion, doing my dream. I'll never get into space. I'm too old and too fat. But that being said, I'm doing the next best thing is I'm putting things into space, and it's great.
Speaking of you're not ever getting into space, I mean, never say
speaking,
never.
Speaking of being old and fat, is that what you just said?
Well, if they lower the launch cost enough, maybe. But
my cardiologist would never allow it. It would be a one-way trip for me.
Well, they may have new meds that.
You never know.
And SpaceX.
I did sign up for Virgin Galactic. I did put a deposit down. So just in case I have that ability, I did put my name on the waiting list.
Would you go if they actually called you?
If I was allowed to go, yeah. I mean, you know, that's crazy. It's a crazy opportunity, you know, to go into space. But I really want to go to space. I want to go like the next generation ISS. I don't know if I want to fly in something that was built by the lowest bidder 40 years ago. That's like giving me an iPhone from when I was a kid. Yeah, I had this brick phone in my car. I'm not sure I want that back again. But maybe the next space station. Yeah, that could be kind of cool.
So that brings me to what may be close to the end of the show, and unless somebody wants to send us an email or give us a call again. But we've recently been talking on the space show about private space stations coming online. I know that they're not satellites, but they are in space. And I've had some recent guests on that think maybe our international partnership with Russia may dwindle and the space station may come down earlier. And that might not be such a bad idea, because when the space station comes down, that opens the market for the private space stations to get up there. Whether there'll be a lag in time or not, that it remains to be seen. How do you think about, or do you think about, private space stations, and would that have any significance to your business?
It had no significance to our business. I mean, you know, for what we do, I think it's great if someone could do it. I mean, you have a lot of people out there, whether it be Bezos or Musk or one of these other, you know, multi-billionaires who can actually afford to do it, but it's a massive undertaking. I mean, you know, you think about it, the Artemis rocket, you know, Artemis rockets cost about $11 billion to get it off the ground, to get the program going. You know, it's a real financial undertaking. But the benefits that have come from having the ISS to the scientific community has just been enormous for the past few decades, having the ability to do things in space. You know, we used to own a company called Made in Space, another company called Nanorex that we sold, that both were based on the ISS. And still are. And, you know, the ISS has real, you know, this real thing, real science can be done in space that you just can't, in a zero-G environment you just can't do on Earth. And it would be a shame not to have that ability as a nation, to lose that ability. But then again, it was a shame to lose the space shuttle. That was a reusable vehicle to go back and forth. They could take payloads back and forth. You know, we have to spend more money as a country on the future, and I think it's very important.
I have another email from you, and this is Randy in Atlanta, and on the space show years ago, it hasn't been mentioned lately, David, maybe you want to look into this, there were people advocating that we would soon have personal satellites controlled by our iPhones, or I guess if you have a different brand, that brand of phone. I haven't heard about personal satellites in a long, long time. This was in the earlier days when CubeSats were coming into fashion or in fashion. What do you think? Is there an emerging market for personal satellites of some sort?
I own my own satellite.
Well,
I have it connected to an Xbox controller.
Yeah, but you're talking about your company satellites, right?
No, we've won them. My partner and I, we own ourselves. We built it for ourselves.
So
you got it. It's a little satellite. It's just fine. It moves around. It's kind of fine, you know. It's one of the perks of the job.
What can it do?
It just takes pictures, but it's fun.
Is this going to be something that ordinary folks can do someday and maybe move it around
totally.
And take pictures?
Totally. Yeah, and listen, if whoever wrote in the email wants to pay for it, we'll build them one.
What do you think it would cost to build a small personal satellite to go take pictures or something?
Build it, launch, maybe $1 million.
A million dollars? And how long would...
And it's the last 5 years.
5 years?
Yeah. And a personal satellite.
Could they fly it over anything? Like, could they fly it over Ukraine or their neighbor's house?
There are laws what you could do over the U.S., but Ukraine, they knock themselves out all day long.
Wow. A personal satellite and launch for $1 million.
Yeah, I'm guessing. It's a good guess. But, you know, I mean, look at Planet. Planet built their quote-unquote flock, and they took a commercial camera lens, threw it into a 3U that we developed, and they used that to go ahead and take pictures. I mean, how much did the flock satellite cost from Planet Labs? I'm looking here to see the flock. They say it costs a few thousand dollars to make their satellite, which is, it's got to be more than that. But even so, it's cheap. A flock satellite's cheap.
But you need a ground station for the data, or can your cell phone be the ground station?
No, you need a ground station for the data, but you can go and hire a KSAT or somebody, you know, AWS, or someone to be your ground station for you. You know, there'll be money running it, but it's not out of the reach of, you know, there are a lot, you know, if guys like, you know, even guys, obviously guys like Bezos, Musk, a lot of billionaires could do it, but even millionaires. Look at all the guys who pay to go to the ISS. They're paying, what, $35 million to get a joyride to the ISS?
Yeah, or more. I think some of them paid up to $80 million, I think.
There you go. So for a fraction of the cost, they can own their own satellite. Fraction.
Or I guess instead of a timeshare condominium, you could have a timeshare personal satellite.
Right. I mean, you can go on Kickstarter and crowdfund a satellite. Actually, there was guys who did it once. Years ago, they did one on Kickstarter, built a satellite, and then they actually built an app for your iPhone so you could see it. And I don't remember who it was. I remember this like 5 or 6 years ago. These guys did it. And I wish I remember what it was, but it was pretty. You never know.
You know, this has been a really great discussion talking with you. Have we missed anything? Is there something you wanted to maybe say on the show that we haven't gotten to or have omitted or something?
No, listen. I really appreciate you having me, David. This has been a lot of fun too. It was more fun than most, I will admit. And I very much enjoyed being here today. So thank you very much.
I hope we can check in with you later because this is a part of the business we don't get to cover or talk about very much. So I'd love to get back in touch with you down the road and see what may be changing.
Let's do it. I'd love that. That'd be awesome. You tell me when.
Okay, will do. And I guess it's corny to say live long and prosper. So I'll just say stay well and healthy and safe, which is what I usually say. And
it's not corny, because you want people to live long and you want people to prosper. So remember, this is the same TV show that created the flip phone. So how bad should it be?
Well, not.
Here you go. There's some guy at the Motorola who's saying, wow, I did that. We watched the show and I did that. They watched the sci-fi and they created a cell phone.
And I always tell my listeners and guests to keep looking up. But you probably do that all the time anyway. So.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
It's been a real
great
pleasure.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Okay. And listeners, Jim Muncy returns on Sunday. Mark, thank you again. Those of you who sent an email, and John for your phone call, everybody have a great weekend. Goodbye from Mark, David, and The Space Show.